Hey, out there in semi-radio world, welcome to another edition of the AWOL Radio Show. And I'll be plugging in some applause somewhere around there, so you'll hear people clapping for the show. It's a lovely Sunday, beautiful sun, sky, open, springtime is here, finally. Also, we have our first guest, but first, before I introduce her, let me introduce myself. This is, Mike Powell, aka The Wars here. You don't hear my sidekicks today, but they'll be here later on. Back to our guest. So today we have a great guest. She is a writer for currently DC Comics. And she's been working on a couple of issues. You guys might have heard of the Suicide Squad, a little group called the Suicide Squad. So they have a few issues out, and she's been working on one of their, I have to say, probably not used as often characters, Amanda Waller. So if you guys know, work for Cadmus, the infamous Cadmus. So she's been doing some writing for them and kind of bringing out that character. So without further ado, I'm going to let Vita say who Vita is. Vita, welcome.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here. Yep, like you said, I'm a writer. I do freelance. DC is kind enough to throw me work. I've written a couple of things for DC. I've written some Amanda Waller, as you said. I did an issue of Batgirl that came out like a week or two ago.
Wow, okay.
Which is super cool. And I've done short Wonder Woman and Green Lantern pieces as well.
Very nice.
Hopefully other stuff
will be coming down the pipeline.
Yeah. And I also do, I'm currently writing a creator-owned limited series with Black Mask.
Ooh, okay. So apparently she does a lot more than I thought. So so there you go. Now, I know you guys are out there like, wow, Mike has a guest. And yes, I do. And that's great. But most importantly, what I thought was interesting, and this is one of the key things I reached out to Vita for, was to get her perspective on this. Because as a female writing in what has always mostly been a male dominated world is comic books, man. I mean, every major superhero is a guy.
That's not true.
True. I mean, well, name a few. We got Wonder Woman, right?
Wonder Woman. Just DC alone, we have Wonder Woman, Black Canary, both on the Justice League.
True.
Hawkgirl.
True.
Vixen, who's one of my favorites.
Vixen? Now, all right. So now we got to talk about Vixen real quick. Because, all right. Now, granted, these are all key superheroes. And I just feel maybe some of them are underutilized. Not as much light shine upon them as we see now starting to change with the Wonder Woman movie coming out. The upcoming Batgirl film is that was announced. Is going to be coming out soon. So we're starting to see that change when usually we were seeing mostly just male characters. But Vixen, and for those who don't know about Vixen, I didn't even know about Vixen. It was Justice League Unlimited that put me on to Vixen.
Gina Torres, right? She voiced Vixen in that? Gina Torres?
Yes.
So good.
Vixen is ridiculous. Now, I'm going to leave this to Vita, because Vita probably knows a lot more about Vixen than I do, as I'm clearly a newbie to her. So, all right, Vita, tell the people, who is Vixen?
Vixen, I mean, there are a couple of incarnations, or you know, as the years goes on and things are rebooted, things change. But basically, you can take on the aspects of any animal on the planet that she's on. And her powers are centered around her necklace, which is a totem, which is super cool. So she, like, taps the necklace and she thinks, you know, bear. And then she has the strength of a bear or the hunger for a salmon of a bear. I don't know. Whatever she's doing. And she's really interesting because, like, I really like Animal Man, too. And like Animal Man, she can do really weird stuff. Like, I remember in an issue of, I think, Birds of Prey, if I'm not mistaken, she was hanging out with Huntress and they were fighting people and she got hurt. and she channeled an earthworm to heal herself completely, because an earthworm can pretty much heal itself from almost any damage. Yeah. So, like, she does, like, she's baller.
See, that's crazy.
She's also, like, a fashion icon, and, like, she's basically the Beyonce of the DC universe, but with powers. Not convinced that Beyonce doesn't have, so.
She may have something on the low.
You never know.
We're not sure yet. But, now, that's a character, too, that when I was watching her in the animated series, what captured me about her is her power. She has...
It's so cool.
Her power is crazy.
They're bananas. You can do whatever you want with that.
When they finally started using them more, I forgot what episode I was watching, but definitely it was her paired with Green Lantern.
And there was a
huge battle, and she was, like, protecting him.
Yeah.
And you see this little woman, like this little figure, regular outfit, nothing, if you look at her, says... Oh snap, like she can kick somebody's behind. But once she taps onto that totem, onto that necklace.
Yeah, I mean, she's incredibly powerful and very intelligent.
She knows how to utilize, because knowing what creature works for what moment, for what battle, what situation.
Split second, she's brilliant.
I mean, you gotta think.
She's a businesswoman. She's used to being,
it would make sense. You gotta be able to think quickly.
Yeah, she's
and now what I didn't know was that she was able to utilize any creature's power on the planet that she's on. That I didn't know. That's correct, and that's scary.
I'm almost positive, and this is something you could definitely Google, but
that's a disclaimer right there. Guys.
Yeah, Google. Right. No,
so
I
should tell
you
right now. Google this.
Always just Google. In case. Always double check. But check my numbers. Her and Animal Man tap into this thing called the Red. Right. So like Swamp Thing taps into the green, and it's all the ecosystem that has to do with plant life and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a version of that for animals, and so it's hooked into the ecosystem of the planet. I've always thought of it, too, because it's magic, it's not bound by these scientific laws of, like, mm-hmm. like the metahumans mm-hmm. are. And I was like, you know, I've always wondered if she could tap into other heroes' powers. Now, we've never seen that, but imagine for a second, like, if she, you know, if she had to run really fast and Cheetah wasn't going to cut it, she's like, Flash is on this planet, she taps into the Flash's powers and runs.
And technically, that's still following the logic or the rule, if you will, of that totem, which is the creatures of that planet.
Right.
Humans are creatures of this planet.
I'm just saying.
Powers or no powers. So, and Flash is a human. He's not like a Superman type being. He's a human. He's from this planet. So
I mean, that would be awesome. I don't know if that will ever happen.
But then that would make her near unstoppable.
I mean, there are definitely some characters where you're just like, I'm pretty sure they could solve any problem by themselves. Her, Martian Manhunter. I'm like, that dude...
Why does he team up with anybody?
I don't understand.
I mean...
he's like the smartest dude, almost the smartest dude on the planet. He's invincible. He can't hurt that dude.
Yeah.
Because he's super strong, super fast, can phase. And I think he's like functionally immortal. So like...
He is functionally immortal.
Yeah.
I mean,
he's like a psychic. I'm like, just... You win. Like,
I mean, he can go into your mind and shut you down.
Okay.
I don't really get why he hangs with the Justice League.
He doesn't lonely. Really.
Maybe he's bored.
He's bored.
But now that's the funny thing. He does get lonely. Remember, remember the episode when Darkseid comes back to Earth, and he's down in China hanging out with his wife. All right, walking around along the Great Wall on vacation. Oh he's in the body of an old man, and he's like, "I gotta go do this," and she's like, "I know."
Oh,
he takes off.
That's right.
And I was like,
him.
"Yeah, he."
John
he is
Jones.
Lonely. He like does. Wants to have a companion. Likes to have people around him.
And Superman's got to be a good conversation, because Superman is also one of the most intelligent people on the planet.
Exactly,
so
and is an alien and is friendly.
Right.
So
he
the last of his kind. So he has a lot in common. So
yeah.
I could see why they have a bond almost instantly. And then they both have this strong sense of balance and justice and boundaries.
Yeah, for sure. It's
things that
they
just won't do.
Right.
Completely.
I agree,
And they have the strength to do. So his addition is kind of key. But we are sidetracking here, talking about, and we'll come back to some more comic book stuff in Justice League, because there's a lot of things about Justice League that I like, and a lot of characters that kind of intrigue me. Yeah. The Question is another one of them, but...
That's my favorite superhero.
But we'll come back to that before the end. So, all right, let's dive into Amanda Waller.
Sure.
Now, again, this is another part, or part where I'm kind of green at. Who is Amanda Waller? Why is she important in the DC universe?
Oh, man. So Amanda Waller is the person, amongst many other things. She's been in charge of a lot of task forces that do a lot of really gnarly things for the greater good. So, you know, supposedly for the greater good. Mm. I don't know if you saw the Suicide Squad movie.
I did.
There's a point where she references herself as HBIC, and I was like, correct. that's who she is. I call her head bae in charge, but we all know that's not what she meant. But
yeah.
I love her so much. She is the person that is willing to do whatever it takes to serve not just her country, but I truly believe that in her mind, she's never going to be absolved of the bad things that she does, but there is a reason for them. And so she will do them. She doesn't mind getting her hands dirty. She doesn't mind sending people to die because she will make sure that this planet persists. That's her job.
So she's an anti-hero.
I think in a way.
In a sense, right?
I mean, she's in a really weird way. She's the ultimate government man. You know what I mean? Like she's that one that you're afraid of because they're willing to torture someone to death to get to get the code for the bomb or whatever it is. She's smart enough to realize that in order to do the things that she does, she's going to need to assemble teams that are incredibly specialized. So that's where Checkmate or Suicide Squad.
Okay, so that's why she ends up picking players like the Deadshot character, right. Like Captain Boomerang.
And what's cool about her and that is that, I mean, we've all done this, right? Nerds sit around like, all right, if you could have a team,
together? Who would you comprise?
Exactly. What do you need? Well, you need the guy that can shoot things. Well, she's got the best shot ever. You need the magic person, right? Well, whoever it is in that moment. She's the ultimate chess master in that way. She understands how all the pieces work. She understands how to make them do what she wants. And she'll lie to you to get you to do what she wants.
Straight to your face.
She does not care. But at the end of the day, she has this oddly kind of solid moral center. It's her own morality. Mm. And I don't think that she is capable of empathy. But she hinges everything that she does on this greater good that she sees. And I think in that way, I think anti-hero is a good way to put it, because I don't think by any stretch she's a hero, but everything she does is in service of saving the day.
It's for the benefit of
she does things that even Batman wouldn't do, and he'll do a lot of gnarly stuff.
Yeah.
So I love when they go head to head because she always wins. She always
those episodes, always man. Wins. And she just knows when he's coming. She's hid things from him in front of
which
him,
which is crazy,
which is almost impossible. And she's done it.
It's amazing, and that's what I really what it always drew me to that character was that she does things that we would anyone else would be like, that person's evil, 100% evil. But you're like, no, she's literally doing it because she knows that no one else will do it. And she's like the character. All right, so I don't know how deep your nerd goes in terms of sci-fi, but I was a huge fan of Firefly.
And no, I never watched that ever. But I've heard nothing but good things about it. I just never watched it.
Came for Gina Torres and stayed because I liked it. But in the movie Serenity, the main antagonist of the movie is this man called the Operative. And he is working for the government to create this perfect world. That's what they want to do, where there's no crime, there's no anything bad. But he is a monster. And he gives this speech at one point about how he's doing everything he does in service of this world. And Mal, the captain of the Serenity, says, you know, but like, you're awful. And he's like, what, did you think that I would also be there? No, I'm a bad person. I don't get to go to the good place, but I make it happen. I'm the one that
he's
makes
creating it.
Exactly.
Knowing that he will not gain entry.
Yeah, because he's done
because
things
he's
that are
done things to make despicable. This place exist.
And
that's
I think that's war, in a nutshell. I think that Joss Whedon read a lot of Suicide Squad and went, I'm going to make a dude Amanda Waller, basically. And he, like, she...
You feel like you hit it right on the nail.
Yeah, I was like, this is, you know, when I went in to kind of thinking about writing the issues that I wrote a two-shot Amanda Waller story. I was like, okay, who fundamentally is this person? This is a person who is able to justify everything she's ever done.
That's right.
And shows everything she's
perfectly
lost.
It makes sense. I mean, the things that she does is always
she murders, she lies. I mean, she sends people vicious. To be tortured. She sends her own people to be tortured too. She has no problem doing that because she thinks that at the end of the day, the means justify the end.
Now,
or the end justifies the mean, rather the other way around. The ends justify
just the means. Now, I did see. I noticed, and I might be wrong, but if my memory is accurate, you did dive a little bit into her past, which is something that I know I haven't seen. Well, usually all my understanding of Amanda Waller is her in her present day position as the head of Cadmus, as this badass government chick that's going to level any playing field to make sure that not just the US, because she's definitely pro-American.
Yeah, she's very much a patriot.
But the world comes out on top, safe. So to see this strong female character, which again, often I feel that when we're introduced to strong female characters, we only are introduced to them as first their dominant selves and then their love interests. And that's what we kind of know about them. Who do they love and what and how strong they are. But you took it a very interesting route. You dived into something that's more personal, something that's not just about love. It was about her family, like her kind of like her upbringing, her childhood, almost in a sense. Correct.
I went into I went into some of the background that we'd kind of seen, but from her perspective. So like her children. Mm. So she her background includes a family that is gone now, which is I find interesting because it's almost always you see that. In terms of a man, like he's lost everything and that's why he's so hard and all this stuff.
And you immediately understand it.
Right. I think it's a shortcut. And it's one that I understand. It's not one that I look down on at all. But I wanted to kind of go in and show how that would affect her. But also show that she's not necessarily hardened. She has always been this person. And it's not that she has valued, you know, the lives of her family less, but that she has always seen her duty as more. Mm. And it's, I don't know, I really wanted to, this was something I talked to my editors about, and I really wanted to go into who she was and how it affected her personally, because, you know, you get the facts, right? Family dead because of this, because of that, she does this now, but you never really get to see that vulnerability and how that makes her a stronger person. And that's what I wanted to do.
And how that kind of aids in the decisions that she makes in this superpowered world. I mean,
for sure. As a human too.
As an everyday human, but clearly butting heads and sometimes kicking the behind of the people who run this huge tower floating above Earth with superpowers.
She has no fear.
And that's something that I thought was admirable when she goes up against Lex Luthor, the super Lex Luthor that's now merged with Brainiac.
Oh my god!
And his quote it's like, oh, so did you think that you could come here and beat me all by yourself? And I, you know, honestly, I thought that her response would have been, no, this is why I brought help, like maybe Batman or something. But her response was, yes.
She's like, I got your number, dude. I know
but,
who you are.
But just in case.
I've got a backup plan within a backup plan.
I love this woman.
She's so unrelenting. Like, she's just the tenacity of this person. And I think it goes beyond any gender or anything. I can't think of very many characters who just... I think maybe when he's done especially well, Batman. It's just... unstoppable in his belief that this is what he has to do. And I think Waller is the same. What I find interesting about Waller, though, is that, you know, you have this idea of her being this person who's just like a bull, kind of like powering her way through. Yeah. And she's, and again, when the Waller of my dreams is that she's as wide as she is tall. Like, I want her, you know, that's what I said too. I was like, hey, if I write her, can she be a fridge? Like, I just want her to be humongous. Like, I just want big, fat, dark Amanda Waller. And they're like, yes, absolutely. But I think that that the way that she speaks and her actual physicality is a mask. It's not her only power. She's not just this like brute force. She's so subtle. And what I wanted to do in the issues that I wrote, and I think I did this in her exchange. I kind of brought it all together in the exchange she has with Katana at the end of the issues that I wrote, was she's been planting these seeds of survival in the Suicide Squad. So she's lost people in her life, maybe because she thought she could do everything by herself, or maybe she didn't trust enough, or all of these other things, and she has learned. And so she's not just this like fist that punches through a wall. She is very cleverly, you know, equipping these people to without survive. Their knowledge to survive, because she knows that they don't trust her. So clearly she can't just be like, do X, Y, and Z. But she's smart enough to be able to maneuver them into these habits that then save their life in the story.
And that's what makes her character, I feel, and just it gives her so much more depth, opposed to just the solid rock force. And going back to the description of just her physicality, that's another thing that I thought was interesting, is that her stature,
I love it,
speaks of just strength.
She's so powerful.
Everything about her, even the woman who played her in the movie,
Viola Davis, love that. I'll be her best friend one day.
Speaks to just strength. Like, I don't want to piss this woman off because I don't know what she's going to do.
Whatever it is, you know, gonna hurt.
Even when she's like happy with you, you still feel like she's pissed off.
Yeah, you feel like you failed still. And I wanted to. So I saw the movie after I'd written the issues. Mm. Clearly, it came out after. Not after my issues came out, but after they were written and drawn. And there's a scene in the movie where they win, right? And they're like, hey, we won. And she's like, yeah, get back to work. Like, you're going to go back to prison now. And they're like, but we did the thing. And
she's end?
Yeah, exactly.
You heard you more.
She's like when you piss your mom off, you know what I mean? Like, and I was like, good. Because I had written a scene, you know, the Suicide Squad returns victorious from their adventure or whatever, spoiler alert, and Harley is like, you know, you could say thank you, and she's like, or she says something, and Waller's like, I don't pay you to talk, and Harley's like, hey, you don't pay us at all, like, and she's like, well, you get what you're worth, and I was like, they've just won.
The whole dialogue was just like...
and then Katana comes later, and Waller's like, yeah, get out of my office, but she smiles at the end, because she's like, yes, I've succeeded. Yeah. They've lived. Exactly. They've survived, and she may not necessarily like them very much as individuals, but they're her charges, and so she does feel like she is responsible. She's going to replace you if you die, but she does feel a responsibility for them.
You mentioning her smiling brought me back to a Justice League episode.
So good.
They need to bring it back, damn it. Anyways, Miss Justice
League.
Yeah,
we're getting a third season of Young Justice, so I'm cool with that, man.
Yeah, I keep hearing about this, and I'm very excited, but I don't want to get my hopes up. But as of right now, I'm very much anticipating this. Justice Unlimited episode is when we see Terry McGinnis.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Older Terry McGinnis. Yeah. So now he's, you know, he's the Bat, whatever. And he's like going through all this hatred, this self-loathing, whatever.
Very endemic to the Bat people. That's how Bat
apparently rolls, it's definitely in your genes.
Yeah.
So he pops up to Amanda's office, and Amanda's like an old age at this point, and he's talking all this garbage, and she already was anticipating him showing up, which is brilliant because she's like 80 but still on her game.
Man, she's so good, and she
immediately, which I thought was very. A nice little ending to their silver years for her and Bruce, who's no longer the Batman, is her acknowledgement that, hey, Bruce Wayne, oh, that man's amazing.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, he was cold. He was calculating. He was violent. And yes, I hated him for years. But I think she said like one moment or some occurrence happened where she realized how important he was and what a value he was to her and to the planet, just right. to like the whole function of the team. And seeing that recognition just kind of spoke volumes to the role that she plays in the DC universe as a human being.
Yeah,
because I think often we overlook that. I mean, Batman is a human, but because he's so amazing, and we often forget that he's just a person.
I think so. He forgets it too.
Yeah, the way he talks to people. There was a great episode again, Justice League, where he fights against the Darkseid character after he arrives, and he actually wants to go one-on-one with Darkseid after Darkseid just beat the hell out of Superman.
It's one of those things where it's like, what? Someone touch Batman. Someone just let him know that he is breakable. Like, someone come get him. Like, I just want Wonder Woman to walk up, shh, Bruce, shh, just pick him up like a baby. Like, no. I love the rivalry between Amanda and Bruce, because I would like to think that Bruce also has the same respect for her.
Oh, he respects her, yeah.
And it's one of those things where it's like, oh.
He definitely does. When he goes back and talks to her, for guys, you need to go watch the Justice League Unlimited series, because a lot of these references are coming out of there. But when he goes back and talks to her after the tower blows up a city, or like hits a city, right? And so Amanda's like happy as hell, because then she's like, I can let off now with this special squad I got.
Oh, yeah, she's
I think her name is like Kira or whatever, the clone of Supergirl. I'm sending her out. We're going to destroy Justice League, whatever. She's incredibly happy about this, right? And Batman goes and meets with her one-on-one without the Justice League knowing.
Because that's an interesting scene.
He just pops up and he's like, look, what the hell? And she's like, and they have this dialogue, and you can tell that there's a level of respect.
Well, he wouldn't go to see her if he didn't think that she was important, I think. I mean, he's not going to waste his time.
Yeah.
I would like to think, and this is completely a headcanon that I have, that like they meet once a month for chess. Like, I just feel like
just have a game,
just like 3D chess, where they're just like,
does he wear the outfit, or does he go as Bruce? Because he knows that he's Bruce.
Oh, he goes
like
as Bruce.
She already knows that. So
they meet in a park. They don't speak. It's just like one of those like chessboards on the table, and they just play chess for an afternoon.
Is it timed?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, just click, clap.
Love it. Love it.
I would like to imagine that's true, because I feel like as humans, unaugmented humans as well, they have to work so much harder for everything. And Batman has all this training that he did for decades.
Money.
He's a straight white dude with money. That's its own superpower. But they, more than any other two people in that universe, maybe Lex as well. But Lex, again, has augmented himself. But even still, they've had to figure out how to navigate this universe where there are these godlike beings everywhere just wrecking stuff.
Yeah.
And they've done it. I think Batman and Amanda Waller are much more successful in processing than Lex Luthor, but...
Yeah, Lex is deranged. I loved his character, though. I did not like his character in the Batman Superman movie. I thought that was atrocious. But I do like his character overall. But I used to hate his character, though.
To me, Lex Luthor is like the black dude from the Superman adventures, who was literally just the same. Well, his body type and skin tone and everything was the same as Harvey Dent on the animated Batman show.
Okay,
he actually looked exactly bald Harvey Dent. So to me, he's a black dude. And he was the smartest dude, and he was super. And it was so interesting to me growing up, whether or not they intended him to be black, he is black. Seeing him juxtapose against Clark Kent, who is this all-American, seemingly, you know,
very, very
man. Who I again, I not usually a Superman fan. I enjoy well-told Superman stories, but animated that show was untouchable.
It was amazing. I thought it was really good.
Yeah, no, I loved it.
And it never made him look too powerful, which is what I appreciated.
They definitely brought him down to a manageable level. But, like, that's Lex Luthor to me. That guy, who wasn't doing things just to be an asshole. Wasn't doing things because he was insane. Yeah. He was doing things, I think, because he saw it. He's very calculated, and I think he very much saw it as a way to combat.
Against this kind of god being.
Yeah, who I think he saw as a personal threat, not just a threat to the planet.
Yeah, and I feel that that's a character that hopefully we start seeing more of, is this this human champion, Lex Luthor, because that's kind of what he is, and kind of what he sees himself
in,
as.
In his own way. So, yeah. Like, have you seen, do you watch Supergirl at all?
No, I haven't watched any of it.
It's great. The first season's on Netflix. Go do it. Do yourself a favor. Okay. I think it's the best live action superhero show that they've done in a long time.
Okay.
They tried to do this with the Maxwell Lord character, right? In the first season, they basically Lex Luthored him, and that did not work. And in the second season, they bring in Lex's sister, Lena Luthor, and she is the sympathetic pro-human character. She's not evil. She runs L Corp. She's rebranded Lex Corp into L Corp because Lex is, of course, is this bad guy.
Yeah,
and she's
trying, so she doesn't want to be associated.
Right.
So
she's trying to elevate the company, yeah, but she still, in a very real way, is touched by his ideas. And one of her first introductions, she's made this machine. So it's been revealed that aliens exist long ago because of Clark, but more and more aliens have been showing up. And she has this machine that can tell if you're an alien or a human. And Kara goes to talk to her as Kara, not a Supergirl, clearly.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's like, well, how dare you out people like that? Like, you know, like aliens are people too and all this stuff. And Lena's like, yes, but aliens are much more powerful than we are, and we have a right to know that. We have a right to protect ourselves from that. And that's the line. That's the, I think, the fundamental Luthor line right there. But she does it in a way that isn't, I think that they successfully, she's not deranged. She, in a very real way, has respect for, like, Supergirl and the other aliens.
She's
aware of her own mortality, and what her company is about to her is making technology that will help even the playing field for human beings. And I was like, oh yeah.
I like that idea.
You guys struck that, because first season, Maxwell Lord is fun, right? But he's building crazy stuff to kill Supergirl all the time. And you're like,
he's obsessed.
What? Too. Yeah. And you're like, what? Stop. Like, you're killing, you say you're for people, but you're killing people to kill Supergirl. Yeah. And Lena is much more interesting in that she's like, no, I'm building all these technologies to help people be safe.
Yeah, which is a different insight completely.
Right, it can lead to scary stuff.
Yeah,
which
is normal.
Screw over the aliens.
Person gets it.
But this is the idea that is much more prevalent, or much more understandable, and that can lead to some really crazy prejudice things. But it's a lot more relatable than, like, I'm a crazy person.
Yeah, and I just want to kill you.
Yeah,
only
exactly.
You, but I can't, and I know that. But I'm gonna try.
All the time. Exactly.
So yeah, it's a bit over the top. Now.
Getting
Speaking
back.
Of writing out characters, I gotta ask, have you ever made your own character growing up? Was that something that as a child you were like, I'm gonna draw my own little saga here?
Of myself or just...
No, just, you know, what was, like, one of your favorite characters that you might have created as a youngin'?
Well, I think any creative person kind of imagines their own characters. I'm trying to think. I had a... Clearly, this was a childish idea, but I had a whole spy universe that I made up when I was in high school. So I grew up Catholic. I'm a reformed Catholic, or recovering Catholic. It's like being a recovering alcoholic. It's always there. Like, the instinct is always there, but I am fighting against it. I've the utmost respect for people with faith. I just found in my life that the particulars did not make sense, and that they had caused more harm to me and to people that were like me than not. Some people, like my grandmother, for example, who's a devout Catholic, can navigate that and be wonderful, and that's awesome. I could not. So I was exploring all these ideas about religion when I was in high school, kind of like I'd moved away from that. I needed to fill the void, and I made up this spy universe in which all of the saints and all of these, like, gods were aliens that had come through dimensions. And we had, like, there was, like, almost like a DEO of my universe called the T3A, whose job it was to find and kill them, because they only caused, like, damage in this universe. Whenever these, like, extraterrestrial or extra-dimensional beings would come through, and you'd get, like, you know, you know, pick a god that you like, a Zeus, okay, or a, you know, whatever, they would throw off the balance and everyone would end up screwed. So this agency, you know, had technologies that allowed them to contain and destroy these beings. And so I clearly had a character that was me in that universe, because I too was a 16-year-old. And that was probably in the back of my mind, my favorite character that I had just made up was the me that was a super cool spy that was part of this universe
of constantly showing up. Yeah. Super powered beings.
It was really
weird. How did
you
fight those guys though? I mean, like, what did you create to be able to combat them?
So the idea is that like they were these beings from this universe that was mostly energy. And in order to break through the barrier, they had to consume energy from our universe. And to do that, they had to have people believe in them. And so that's partially... But once they were here, they were corporeal and you could kill them.
Okay.
So the idea was that like the Judeo-Christian God was trying to gather as much energy as possible. And that's what the like the second coming, the rapture was going to be.
That's what the rapture
was. They would literally, this creature was trying to suck up as much energy as possible to punch through.
To come through to
and just
point.
Take over, you know.
That's interesting, actually.
Wow. So that was a lot of fun.
That's an interesting concept.
It was weird. It was aliens and gods.
It's a little dark, too. I mean, but I like it. I like it. Did you ever, like, write this out?
I used to write prose, and I wrote, I must have been hundreds of pages in this universe. Just short stories.
Yeah.
Short
stories. So, like, really capturing it in glimpses.
Yeah. It was almost procedurals, but then you'd get pieces of the larger story through each procedural and through each character. So, yeah, that was...
That actually sounds pretty sick.
That was a lot of fun. That will never get made. But it was a lot of fun.
You would have to do that personally.
That's a me money project.
Yeah, exactly. Independent publishing for that one. I did have a comic book, actually, when I was a kid. Actually,
I think
junior
we all
high.
Did,
yeah. So in junior high, I forgot the guy's name. He was a great teacher. So after school program, one of the programs was create your own comic.
That's awesome.
And it was myself and a friend of mine. Her name was Melanie Gill. And she was an artist. She was a drawer. So I was the writer. She was the illustrator. And we came up with this character called Kuban, right? So it's spelled K-U-B-A-N.
Perfect.
Right? And I think we had a hyphen between the U and the B, I think. Something like that. So his power, basically, and I don't know where I came up with this. And I vaguely remember this now. But he was a regular looking person that would morph into this like hybrid creature, right? So his top half would still be human. His bottom half was like a snake. It was like a snake's lower end. So it was like coils and everything.
Oh, that's crazy.
He had these wings and he had energy blasts.
Nice.
I don't remember what his origin, like, why did he turn into that creature? Listen, like, what was the purpose of the... Like, I don't remember any of that.
You can figure that out after you've sold it.
But it was pretty interesting. It was pretty interesting. So, all right. As we're coming to a wrap-up, now it's the free-for-all. Let's talk about Question or some of our other favorite characters. Give me, like, a cool five hero or villain that you enjoy and why.
Sure. Of all time, or just
let's not go into all time.
Through my mind.
Time is a long,
it's a long bit. A
so
really,
let's just say right now comes to mind.
Number one is always the Question. I've loved the Question, specifically the Renee Montoya Question since her inception. I remember reading 52, which was the event that DC did. I want to say in like 2005, where every week of the year, so 52 issues, there'd be a new issue, and it was a year without Batman, Superman, or Wonder Woman.
Ooh.
So all these other really cool superheroes got to come forward and do stuff. And one of the storylines, which I believe was written by Greg Rucka, if I'm not mistaken, was Renee Montoya had just quit the Force. Some really bad stuff had happened in Gotham Central, which is my favorite comic of all time.
Now, she's a detective there,
yeah,
right?
She was
one of the cleaner ones.
She was one of a squad of non-corrupt cops.
Yeah.
James Gordon hand-picked this squad, a day shift and a night shift, of incorruptible cops. And she almost crosses the line. And so she quits because she's like, I would rather stop being a detective than ever
than do taint
that.
This. Yeah.
And so she is fallen into this alcoholic spiral of just sadness. And the first question finds her and he's like, hey, I'm going to bother you. And she's like, I could literally kill you with my hands. Like, leave me alone. Let me die. Let me die in peace. I just want to drink myself into a coma. He's like, nah, there's weird stuff happening. Let's go check it out. And so he like badgers her, basically harasses her into coming.
He's a weirdo, by the way.
Oh, I love him. I love him so much. Charlie/Vic.
He's a weird dude.
He's the best. And he's just, I mean, I love noir. It's my favorite genre. Any flavor of it. And he's the perfect funny noir guy, which is so weird. but he convinces her to come. He's like, all right, you check out this one thing with me. And then if you're out, fine.
I'll leave you alone.
Yeah, I'll leave you alone. You can die. Yeah. He's like, and she goes and they end up uncovering this intergang kind of like craziness. And so she's like, damn it. So she gets drawn back into it. And what you find out during that storyline, spoiler alert for 12 years ago, is that he's dying. And he needs someone to take up the cause.
The mantle of the question.
Right. He needs someone who is ready to go and find the answers to these questions that no one cares about, but are very important.
Important, yeah.
He needs someone. I mean, I love street level heroes. That's why I love Batman, although he's more than a street level hero because he's
now,
rich.
Yeah, now he's ridiculous.
But I love Black Canary. I love those guys because they deal with these problems that are, they're not cosmic. They're, you know, they're almost drops in the bucket, but they matter to the people that they're affecting.
Yeah.
And so she ends up taking over the mantle after he dies. And they become very close and she's wrecked by his death. And you meet her ex-girlfriend who's Batwoman, which is amazing and like all this stuff. But she basically becomes a PI for no money. She's just like, people are, you know, people come up to her and it's 9 times out of 10, it was brown people, which was super cool. And they'd be like, hey, there was one where like this girl goes missing and this child goes missing. I can't remember if it was a boy or girl. And the family member's like, no one cares because we're brown. Please help us.
She's like, missing kid.
I'm on it.
It's crazy.
So I love.
So she takes on like almost everyday missing persons, like basic things that.
And it always ends up like, I mean, there's street level stuff, but it also like she'll take on intergang because like Superman's busy with like, you know,
fighting.
Psychic starfish, whatever.
Yeah.
So she's like, well, like no one cares. And it's very much like. Wow. Like the Luke Cage kind of like, well, no one's going to help us, so we're going to do it ourselves.
Yeah.
And she, I love that. And she was also like the only Hispanic gay superhero until like America Chavez. I mean, there's others, but like she was the number one.
The question mask?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. She's full on question.
Full on question, but just female. So she got the hat.
She's got the hat. She's got the tie.
The trench coat.
Yeah. She hangs out with.
Question is just a weird dude, man.
He's
him
so
and Huntress
funny.
Are funny. All right, so question is number one on your list.
Question's number one. Comic book characters specifically. I mean, I go back and forth. I love DC and I love Marvel and I love Image and I love all this stuff.
Okay, so.
I love.
Pick from any universe is fine.
I love Black Widow. I adore her. I had an idea for a Black Widow movie that I would kill to have made. Of it so much. She's so fascinating to me, especially when they, for a while, they were suggesting that she was like a botched super soldier. Like,
ooh,
and so that's
so
like
that
she knew Bucky from back in the day, and that's why she's been around for so long.
She's so nasty. Yeah.
Well, she's like ex KGB, and I'm like, that's not possible if you're my age. You know what I mean? Like, there was no, that's not a thing.
KGB.
Yeah, so. But they're kind of suggesting that she, like, actually was the original Black Widow, and I was like, oh, God, give it to me.
That makes sense. I like that idea.
I thought it was genius, and then they kind of dropped that. And they dropped that completely in the movies, which I thought was a bummer.
Oh, that would have been a nice little...
Yeah, because I was like,
nice
Winter Soldier.
Right there.
But they unfortunately, they name her, and they give her birthday in Winter Soldier, which I was so bummed about. Because I was like, you guys had a real chance to like bring that
And
that
really
back.
Create a more depth, a more... I guess you could say just a more well-rounded character because Widow, again,
she's
I know
so
her for like kicking ass. I mean, the girl can kick ass, but it would have been nice to get a bit more of a story than just her being this top agent, blah, blah, blah. But
And it gives us more to that.
She was a super soldier. She didn't get as much as a serum or whatever, so she's not as strong as the other two.
Or it's like a weird Russian serum.
But she's like nasty with it and like can kind of hold her own.
Oh, she like, I will put my money on her in almost any fight in the universe.
Yeah.
Like, almost.
Powers or not. Depending on the power, though. Because she's so smart,
too. Yeah, I mean.
Some people, I think, she wouldn't stand a chance.
So, to be honest, the problem with superhero universes is like the same problem with Dragon Ball Z, where you start off at like people are like, oh, his level is 150, and then you're like at 2 million, you're like, all right, okay, stop.
Yeah, his power's off the chart.
Like at one point, like Mr. Satan was like a threat, and then now you're just like, that's a joke.
Look at Beerus. Beerus is ridiculous. Beerus is a god.
You're just like,
and
I'm
thinking,
oh,
he's gonna beat the hell out of Goku. No,
wow. always not.
I'm like, come on.
But like, to me, like it's so interesting when you have characters that are very physical, but also are very intelligent.
Mm.
Like she's not a bull in a china shop. No. She doesn't just, I mean, she's very strong, but she doesn't just punch through. She's very agile, very quick, and she thinks on her feet. I love Winter Soldier for that reason.
So
many things about that movie are great, but you get to see Natasha, being a spy. Like, I'm like, oh, give me that. So I love her.
Okay.
These
are two really good characters so far. Quick question. And
I love both questions, but I'm counting it as one.
Okay.
Let's see, who else? I'm trying to be fair, because I have a lot of I read a lot of books. I have a lot of favorites. I'm a huge fan of Alan Moore's stuff. I know that is, take it as you may, some people love him, some people hate him, but I loved I love Promethea so much. That's a good one. That's real good. It's like the idea is that this character becomes, she's like a hero of myth, not like far back myth, but like she's like a legend, but the more that you talk about her, the more power she gets and she becomes real. I thought that was really
That's
cool.
Actually pretty dope. That's a dope story. Super, yeah. I'm
gonna have to read that. Yeah, it's really good. I really, really like that. I'm trying to think of long persisting series. Clearly, like, some of them it's not fair, so I don't say, like, Wonder Woman is so, like, of course, Wonder Woman and Storm are mostly responsible for who I am as a person. You know what I mean? Like,
it's hard to really insist.
It's not fair. Like,
you
know what
I mean? Together, so. That's like the whole
The Amalgam was my favorite. Did you ever read those Amalgam books?
No,
there
not.
Was an Amalgam book. DC and Marvel, I wish they would still do these things because they were ridiculous, did this Amalgam universe. And they did like Lobo the Duck and like all this crazy stuff. I love Lobo the Duck. And
that's
like
hilarious.
A Wolverine Batman character and like all this stuff. They did an Amalgam of Storm and Wonder Woman called Amazon. And I was like, that is my favorite thing on the planet. That is, she's the best. She's just so cool. There was also an amalgam of Wonder Woman and Punisher, which was pretty cool, but Storm.
But this one won out. So what did they take from the two to put them together?
They gave her the like Amazon on the island kind of background, but she was also like, she was basically a god. She's
a god.
And she gets washed up onto Thymascara and then is raised alongside the Amazons and stuff. And then she goes into man's world and she's like, I'm going to be a hero. And so I guess I have to say Wonder Woman.
I can't not say that one because
it's so good. I love it. It's ridiculous. Cool. It's ridiculous. It was one of those things I think that they did as a gimmick, but they did a bunch of really cool characters. They did a team up of, oh, it was Elektra amalgamated with Catwoman.
Ooh.
Cat's Eye. And I was like, this is genius.
That actually sounds pretty dope.
And she hung out with, I don't remember who they mixed Daredevil with. It was another lady, but it was just like, it was just a lady Daredevil with like actual like horns. And her and Cat's Eye were like
was
partners.
It Sith? No, it wasn't Sith.
No, because it was, it would have to be a DC character, but I don't
I'm thinking of Marvel.
It was like 20 years ago, dude. Like, I don't remember.
It was a while back.
Those are great.
So now, last one, number 5.
I feel like I have to choose a dude. Like, I'm trying to think.
It depends if that works for you. I mean,
I'm trying to think of stuff. Right now, I'm... really enjoying and reading stuff that is written by buddies of mine. And so, like, you know, my friend is writing Kingpin, and the way that he writes Kingpin is incredibly intelligent. I love his Kingpin.
So it's an intelligent Kingpin. It's a, like, very intelligent Kingpin.
You know, there's action in it, but it's just this interesting scheming that you kind of know he's going to do, but you fall for it anyway, and you're like, you know, and it's one of those things where it's like, I can't even be mad at you. I knew you weren't, like, you know what I mean? But like, I don't want to say, let me see, who would I pick? If it was a dude, who would I bro with? Can I do the shows?
Okay. Yeah.
I'm super keeping to characters that are usually, in the comics, I would say, Black Canary.
Okay.
I love, like, again, there are certain characters I'll never mention as, like, top five or whatever, because it's not fair. Oracle/Batgirl, it's not fair. She just wins, like, automatically. Yeah, but yeah. Black Canary, we have an on-again, off-again relationship, but I love her so deeply, and The Legends of Tomorrow, White Canary, is just, she's my heart right now. I love her so much. I was really, like, scared to watch the show, because I was like, there's no way.
Because yeah, I worried that it wasn't going to be done.
Oh, God. I was so... And I was like, this is... Yo. And it's just, for a season, it was just Doctor Who with superheroes, which was fine, because I really enjoyed that. But, like, they really found their stride in Black Canary, or White Canary is so good. I love her so much.
Okay. So that's not a bad five, actually.
A lot of punching people. A lot of people that punch
that's a lot of people who kick ass, but are very intelligent too. So it's a dual board there. You get people who can work tech, who know planning, who know strategizing, but then also can handle their own in a fight, and you don't really need to worry about them. They're going to take care of themselves. My first guy would be Vandal Savage.
Oh man, that guy's impossible to kill.
I love Vandal Savage, and I love Vandal Savage. Well, one, I love the immortal concept. I'm always a big fan of that. And I really got to enjoy him when they wrote him in the Justice League as he's lived throughout time. He set off a bomb, and Superman somehow gets put into the future, into this future where that bomb went off.
Yeah.
And Vandal Savage is like, yeah, I need you to go back and stop me because there's nobody here. I've killed everyone. He's like, do you know what that means? I'm immortal. So there's nobody. I'm so bored. Like, he's like, yeah, basically he's like, I'm bored, and I realize that I actually like having people around.
and
that whole concept just was, it boggled me, because he's always written, usually, like, you know, most immortals who are villains are just written as he's straight, I want to dominate the world, carrying thing. But you got to think that there's so much more depth to their psyche and to their personality after living for so long, seeing death around you constantly, knowing that that's the end result of all beings that are not you. So there has to be something more. So that really opened him up to me. I'm a fan of Apocalypse, again, another immortal. And my thing with Apocalypse that intrigues me, first of all, the reason why I love him is because he's from Africa. So as soon as I found that out as a kid, I was like, what? Well, he's from the mother?
I couldn't tell. I was like, this dude is blue.
It was smart. It was smart to, like, make him grayish, a little bit of blue. There's no actual color.
He's very epic. He's very,
he is, like... Yeah. He comes out, he's like...
The gravitas. Yeah, he always got the big arms.
He's listen, like, to me.
This is what's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I love about him. But also, his character, I mean... they're always dancing around with him like this, but he's really all pro-mutant. He just sees himself as the most powerful, and technically he is, but his whole thing is, hey, they're going to curse us and damn us anyway. He's like the Marvel's version of Malcolm X.
That's Magneto, man.
No. See, Mag is like coming from like, oh, well, they put me in a concentration camp, they killed my parents, da-da-da. That's a different depth. While I feel like he might have gotten some of his ideology from Apocalypse, that was always about the mutants, not family and all that. He was always about mutants. And I feel like little by little, Magneto gained some of that.
I don't think he got his ideas from Apocalypse.
I think he took some of that ideology from the man. Because who knows? Because Apocalypse is a shapeshifter.
Yes, it is.
So he could have been hanging out with him and
I don't know if Apocalypse could... could possibly maintain not being megalomaniacal long enough to school Magneto. I think that Magneto's
You think we just like flip out like, all right, time to conquer.
I mean, it's what he does, man. That is the creature that he is.
And that's where I felt there was a major flaw, is that I felt like they just really didn't explain why. I mean,
yeah, I never think, understood his motivations.
You know, fine, he's megalomaniacal. He's all into conquering and domination.
Well, he thinks he's a god.
But he's a demigod, basically.
Yeah, I mean like he legitimately
he's traveled times and universes, you know? Yeah. So why not just have it be where, because he knows the future and understands where the world will go, he sees his salvation as saving everyone, not necessarily domination and destruction.
I think that that is a really good way to give motivation to a character that's so powerful.
Yeah.
I don't think that they've done that work. I think, like many of our favorite things, we do all this back work for them. Mm-hmm. We're just like, I'm just going to put this in.
Yeah,
put in the slot there. That motivation definitely would explain a lot.
Because he's, you know, so that's two. Number three is another immortal, Solomon Grundy.
Oh, I love him. Born on a Monday.
Yeah. Now, I came to love Solomon because I saw a rendition of him that was not the Hulk-sized brute that they often create him as, but he was a normal-sized dude. And I was like, wow, you know, what if they just didn't have him, you know, he's summoned by somebody all the time. That's why he's constantly resurrected. What if the person was like, hey, I summoned you to be you and just go live life? Because that would be intriguing for someone who's conscious of what he's doing, but cannot stop himself.
Yeah.
So he's forced to kind of do these things because someone summoned him.
But well, he's like a little bit like Etrigan, right? So like Etrigan, yeah. Who I love. Well, whoever says the rhyme owns him. They own his ass.
Except for now is he ripped away now from his host? Because originally he was put into the host still. So the host,
him and Jason together. Blood, but yeah. You could change him into Etrigan totally by right saying and the force poem. Him to
come out. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, and then he's like, damn it, but he'd say
and
it in rhyme.
And then he kind of like does it.
Yeah, he's just like, I hate this.
That's kind of what I love about it.
I like, love him.
He's rhyming about kicking your ass.
I would literally, here, my dream is to have like an Etrigan series where it is like all of his dialogue is written by Lin-Manuel Miranda. Ooh. I feel like that would be just like the perfect, like, but going back to Solomon, that is such a tragic dude. Like,
yeah, his story's kind of depressing.
Seven Soldiers of Victory?
No, I have not. It's Seven Soldiers of Victory.
Great, great, great series by Grant Morrison. And there's, it follows seven different heroes, and there's a lot of stuff that happens, including like the Guardian, who I thought was awesome.
Ooh,
I love the Guardian. But there's like a Solomon Grundy like shout out in there. You're just like, it's a weird side take where you get to see what created the Grundys, and they're like a race of people, and you're like, oh, what a bummer.
Wow.
It's good. It's real good.
That's interesting. See, that's a different take, because I always just thought of him as a single
person
that just kept coming back.
And Solomon specifically is one dude, but like they kind of,
but
like,
it's like an actual people.
Yeah, it's really sad. It's really good.
I have to read this.
That's
okay.
That's a good series.
So that's on my list. Let me see. Wow, I pick a lot of villains. I'm very much into the villains, apparently.
I think Grundy is just a victim of his own circumstance, I mean.
Another favorite character. I guess, for me, it'll probably have to be... I have so many, like...
It's hard, because I want to really say Vixen and Amanda and, like, all these other characters. Dope, you know, Barbara Gordon.
Vixen is pretty dope. I should be fair. It has to be Bat. The Bats is definitely one of my favorite characters.
Bruce specifically, or any in particular?
Yeah, Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
I feel like
there's
never an equivalent. Nobody else who wears that cowl wears it right to me.
Yeah.
Because he just carries a level of
Well, each Bat baby is a different it's a different dude. There will be only one Bruce forever.
Yeah. I especially in the Batman animated series.
Oh, so good.
And then that's Batman the Beyond was done well, but I just loved him in Batman animated. I feel like that really captured how I see, you know, Batman. And then, I guess my next favorite character,
Again, folks, this is off the top, so if we really had time to sit and write this out, it'd be far better. I could really give you a solid...
Probably Talia al Ghul.
But I'm going to have to go with Joker.
Interesting.
And I like Joker because of how they played him in the Batman, The Dark Knight with Heath Ledger. Yeah. And I felt like that really captured how the Batman sees Joker, how Batman and Joker would be an ideal match. Because Joker is so random sometimes.
That's his strength.
I feel like Batman, the least, again, not in the animated series, because in the animated series, I think that Joker was actually brilliant.
I think that was the most perfect
Joker. Batman very well. And I think that's kind of what they were kind of going with in picking in Heath Ledger's character, where it seemed random. It seemed like you're insane. Like, why would he do this? And the bat the whole time is like, why would he do that? That's like extreme. Got it. He's doing it because it connects to this. That does the da da.
That's the thing I didn't like about Joker. I mean, I like that movie because it's fun. I think that movie is super fun. Yeah. And I think that like until the last half hour, I was waiting for the Joker to show up, and then he does. I think that when he shows up, in the nurse's costume, which is hysterical. I was like, that's funny. This dude is a menace and he's terrifying, but he's also funny. But when he gives that speech to Harvey Dent, where he's like, I'm just an agent of chaos, dude. Yeah. This is what I do.
Dog chasing cars.
I was like, that.
If I caught one.
That's him. Mm-hmm. But until then, he was just like a dude in paint. Like the whole thing with the boats.
Yes.
I was like, that's a Two-Face thing. Hmm. That's not a Joker thing at all. Because Joker doesn't care
about choices in this.
No, that's not his thing.
He would have just done it anyways.
And it wouldn't have been like, haha, the joke's that they're both bombs. Like, no, that's not funny. You know what's funny? All right, so 1989 Batman, Jack Nicholson. Favorite Joker, because Mark Hamill is the best.
I give him that, yeah.
But
I give it that.
He does that thing where he's like, I've put chemicals into a bunch of like products. You don't know what combination is going to kill you. So he just slowly watches as people stop wearing makeup and he's like, I don't actually care if anyone dies.
Yeah.
Because that's not what it's about. I just think it's funny that they're not wearing makeup on TV anymore. And you're like, that dude. But like that last half hour of Dark Knight, that Joker, spot on. Like he was like, here's a gun, go. Do the thing. Why? Because why not?
Yeah.
And then when he's like, he's hanging upside down.
Yeah, he's talking to Bruce. You like that scene?
I was like, that's it. That's good. Okay. That's great.
Good.
Just cut out the part with the boats. And I think that you really...
You felt like it was almost...
I would have loved to have seen Two-Face do that in another movie. Like, because that and then have it be a real choice.
Which would have made sense because he's in the movie.
Yeah. And killing him was a bummer. I mean, because it's
cool.
I love Harvey Dent. Well, that's why I wanted that to be for him. And they set up that they're buddies and like all this stuff. And I was like, oh, you could have had another movie to play on that.
And that doesn't take 40 minutes.
No.
You could have shown that in 20 that him and Bruce are buddies and that they have this kind of rapport.
Yeah.
Then have this happen. Boom. He gets in. And I literally just watched that movie
without the boat part. Because I think the pencil trick it's a little cheesy, but I think it's funny. You didn't see that coming.
That's a Joker move.
You really did not see that coming. So as much as I was like, oh my God, I was like, all right, that's hysterical. And then you skip forward and he's just setting loose this man who he knows literally will live by that coin.
Yeah.
He's like,
and he knows that.
Yeah, he knows that. He's like,
he loves that.
I mean, that's that's who he is. Because that's chaos too. Like, there's a choice or whatever. Yeah, but like, you don't know what it's going to be until it happens. So for Joker, like for Two-Face in those moments, like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether you live or die.
Yeah.
It's going to cause chaos. And that means that Batman's going to be running around like a crazy person.
Looking out of it.
Yeah. And I love that.
What about the scene in the interview room or the interrogation room? And he's like, she's on.
And then he lies. I thought that would have... I think that was on the right track. Mm. I think for me, they had played up at that point too much of him being kind of a thug. Like, he's like, oh, like, I'm a criminal. And I'm like, Joker's... I mean, I guess he's a criminal, he's just bananas. Like, he's not... He doesn't do it to commit crime specifically. He does it because
he doesn't break the law for the...
There are no laws for him.
For him, it's like... Well, there shouldn't be any laws.
Yes, I'm going to commit myself to that.
There's order in chaos.
He's entropy.
Yeah, exactly.
And I feel like in a very real way, the Joker, because of that, doesn't have to lie. Because
he's probably the most honest character then.
He should be.
The most honest villain, if you, you know.
Think of, like, the character of, like, the devil. The devil doesn't have to lie.
Yeah.
Because the truth is what's dangerous.
Yeah.
And so with the Joker, it's like,
yeah.
Why would I lie to you? You're not going to be able to save them both.
Yeah, and I know this, and that's so why I'm telling you to go.
Yeah.
Because I want to watch you try.
And also, I like that scene a lot more than the boat scene, because that's a choice that I think the Joker would do, because it would cause chaos personally for Batman.
Which it does.
It's very deep-cutting. Yeah, and I think that's what he really cares about. He doesn't care about boats of people and, like, a larger kind of morality. He doesn't care about killing, you know, Harvey or Rachel either.
He can be just as effective.
I mean, he's kind of a savage brute, but, like, he just, that's the thing he does. But, like, for, he loves cutting at someone personally. And yes, not being able to save a boatload of people will hurt Batman, but it will definitely wreck him a lot more not to be able to save people he personally cares about. And so yeah. I was like, that's a lot closer. If they, again, that's so much closer. But I think that they hit it by the end.
The burning of the money.
That was awesome.
I think that was another Joker scene.
I think that really set the stage
for the audience about what they could anticipate in this man's mind.
Yeah, he does not care.
He took billions upon billions and set it on fire. He's like, I don't care about the money.
Yeah. I thought that was beautiful. Yeah. I was like, just real close up on this moment. It's so good.
And then still, tailored suits.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, yeah.
I heard that he only...
It was expensive. You should know. You bought it.
Yeah, right? I love it. They made a bunch of hot toys for all the Jokers, and they released it. They released the Heath Ledger one, which was beautiful. I don't know if you know what Hot Toys are.
No, I don't know Hot Toys.
It's this company, I think, out of Hong Kong, who do incredibly detailed figures. They're hundreds of dollars.
Of course.
But
it's quality.
They're unbelievable. Oh my god, they look like the tiny, like tiny people. And you can, like, move their eyes, and they come with props and changes of clothes.
Okay.
They're like grown up, like super grown up action figures. And the Heath Ledger one came with, like, the cell and, like, money and, like, an evidence bag with little card and, like, all this stuff. And then the Jack Nicholson came with, like, the chattering teeth and, like, the big remote. And he came with two suits.
Yes.
you're like, oh, this is incredible.
Yes.
Oh, man.
Classics.
Yeah, and just, like, both of them had, they're very sharp-dressed psychopaths. They're great. They're beautiful.
So now you have the Batgirl out.
Yes, that came out, I want to say, last week?
Okay. All right. So people can look for that right now in the Midtown Comics. Batgirl Annual 1, folks. So check that out. It's in your Midtown Comics if you're in the city or any other part of the world where they sell comic books.
And I think it's digital too.
And it's digital, so you can always just get it online. So we're going to wrap up. It's been a great time talking to Vita about her comic book world and just comic book stuff in general. You can find her work right now in Midtown Comics. You can find her stuff up on Amazon as well. I believe there's a graphic out now that comprises pretty much your two issues plus a few others, right?
Yeah. There's the, I think it's Suicide Squad Secret. No, Most Wanted. That's right. Suicide Squad Most Wanted. And it has my story. It has a story by Chris Sabella. And a story by Michael Morrissey, and they're doing Killer Croc and Captain Boomerang.
Awesome. And all that right now is up there. So, final question. For all the other writers out there or illustrators who want to get into the comic book world, which is now becoming very, very hot, how do they go about doing it? What are some of the opportunities out there to kind of get their feet wet?
I would say make the stuff. I write your pitches, write scripts if you're a writer, or if you're a writer artist, draw as much as possible. If you can get together a team, if you're not an artist, like I'm not an artist, to do a webcomic, that's great. You need samples of your work, and you need to go through the process of figuring out how you work before people are going to really give you a chance. There are always, you know, opportunities. Go to conventions, maybe not the giant ones in New York and San Diego, but Emerald City Comic Con is a great con to go to because it's mostly comics people. And you go and you talk to the writers, you talk to the artists, there are editors there. But have samples of your work. Just do it. Just write. I write every day. you know, I'm going to go home right now and write 3 pitches.
After being up for 8 hours. Well, now, what, 12 hours?
Yeah, something like that. I don't even know who I am anymore. Yeah, and I think what's important too, and this actually was important in terms of not breaking in, because, yeah, I mean, it's half luck, but getting a foot into the door is talk to your peers. Talk to people that are at your level in terms of creator, like being creators and making work. Talk to people above your level. Talk to people that are coming up. You know, you want to make as many friends with other creators as possible because we talk to each other. You know, and if, like, for example, if my sister's a writer and she's pitching a bunch of stuff and, you know, she'll be like, oh, what's a good artist for this? And I'll be like, this person or like that person.
And that's who she'll pitch to.
Yeah. And she'll talk to them and they'll put together, you know, a packet together. Or, you know, one of my writing partners, encouraged me to pitch to Black Mask Studios and they really liked my pitch. And now I'm doing a book for Black Mask. So it's really important to talk to each other and to do the work and just understand that it's a lot of shouting into the void.
Hoping that you hear something back.
But. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, I sit for 4 hours a day on a work day and just work on my computer by myself. Mm. You know, on a weekend, I'll work for 6 hours a day before I enjoy my day. It's got to be something you actually care about. Yeah, you got to care.
And that's with anything. I mean, yeah, if you want to really see success in it, you have to be committed.
Exactly. It's the same as being a musician. Listen, you'll take gigs to pay the bills for sure, but you put in as much as you can into those gigs and you also, you make your own stuff too. Mm. You know, I have a folder full of stories that I want to tell and I will, you know, I will find a place for these stories. I'll also take work from people
who offer it.
But the more that you do, the more people are willing to look.
And I think that's key. I think you said a very important thing is creating your own. And I think oftentimes when it comes to creating like a portfolio or something that shows your work, as you know, as you pointed out, whether you're a musician or if you're an artist, a writer, whatever, oftentimes people do want to see your original creativity. What did you come up with on your own? Because it gives them a great idea or a great indication of what you can offer. If they were to offer you a character or a position or a gig if you're a musician, what can you bring that's unique, that's different? And I feel sometimes following a routine is easy. Following what's already been laid out path-wise is easy, which it is because you've already seen what the blueprint is.
You want spec stuff. I mean, you do. That's everyone has that Batman story that they've written or whatever, and that's important. But I will tell you that I am asked the most, especially with companies that I haven't worked with before, they ask me for finished work of my own.
Wow. Finished work of your own.
So this is stuff that, like, if I wasn't published, that I would have paid out of pocket for an artist to do.
I didn't know this. Okay.
You know, luckily I now have more finished work that's been published, so I can be like, this is this thing I did for this company, but... You know, I have pages for my portfolio that were drawn by, you know, people that also wanted to do this work.
So this was a great kind of like a pairing where you offered the writing aspect of it and the people came on board with the illustration talent.
Yeah. I mean, pay your artists. You have to pay them.
Yeah.
even if it's spec work, even if it's just for your portfolio, these people are taking time and energy and creating something with
their
talent
and
they definitely should be paid for their time.
Yeah.
But you need to have something that when someone says, shoot me a, you know, a PDF of, you know, 5 pages or, you know, a quote unquote issue, which is a standard 20 to 24 pages in there, you know, you should be able to be like, here's what I got. This is how, you know, what it looks like when it's finished. If you want to see the scripts, I got that for you. So, yeah, just practice. It's fun. Practice. It should be fun too.
It should be fun.
I cry. Yeah. I cry about it. I definitely, my girlfriend will tell you that I just sit there like, oh my God, I'm asleep. But at the end of the day, it's something that, you know, I'm passionate about. I'm passionate about every page I've written. I'm passionate about the Amanda Waller story that I told because they asked me my take on the character and I got to put myself into that. You know, the Batgirl story that I told is very important to me because I wrote it for one of my best friends from college, basically. Wow. It was about us. Wow. And you get to put yourself into characters that are established. Man. Like, it's just...
And that's unique, too, because you don't always get a chance to tell a story that's so personal to a wide range of readers or listeners. And I think that's...
That's what's so cool about comics is that, you know, I can couch this important emotional thing that I go through in a story where there's someone wearing bat pajamas. You know what I mean? Like, and that's what they want. They want stuff that you care about. They don't just want you to do paint by the numbers.
Yeah.
So
there you go, folks. For all you aspiring artists and creators, whatever the genre or mold is, whether you're a painter, writer, musician, or you write novels, whatever it is, commitment is key, and passion, and love what you do. If you ever feel like what you're doing creatively is no longer fun, then you should consider not doing it. And or find why that passion is not there. But thank you, Vita, for coming out.
No problem.
It was a great chat up. Hopefully we'll have Vita back as we go into the technically third season of the show.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It's a pseudo kind of congrats. I'm still trying to figure that out, but
you got this.
I'll put it together. But
if you want to find me online, I'm on Twitter like 20 hours a day, at Vita Wong. That's at VITAWONG. Clearly not my last name. It's a Resident Evil reference. So you can yell at me and tell me that I suck on there.
Yeah, and I'm sure she'll appreciate it.
Yes, all right. Tell me I suck.
So until next time, you guys can shoot us email at the AWOL Radio Show at gmail.com. We're on Facebook. You know my Facebook. If you know me, then you know my personal Facebook, which I always love people talking to me on. And yeah, please leave any comments, shoot me a text, whatever. But we'll have Vita here again soon. And season 3 should be pretty awesome because we're going to look to do some adventuring. Some of my exploits as I travel to London in a couple of months and talk about the adventures of the Walrus. But until then, guys, enjoy your Sunday or whatever day that you're listening to this. Make sure it's a lovely evening, day, whatever time it is. And until next time, you be well. Peace.